Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on 100.2 FM, 95.1 FM, Freeview 277 and online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Is that your phone ringing?
Yeah, it's my mum.
Oh, well, you know, I always tell the guests at the beginning of the show, do put your phone onto silent.
My phone is on silent.
Is it?
Yeah.
What's that ring then?
I've no idea, but it's on silent. Look.
Oh, all right then. I'll let you off.
But it did ring, you're right.
Yeah, it's as if by stealth. We've got very, very busy Twitter, but I have a few emails which we must read. There's a careers event. They need seven more local businesses to take part in a free careers event at the Island Works, the famous Island Works in Sheerness on the Isle of Sheppey, the sun-kissed Isle of Sheppey. Thursday, February the 22nd, so that's next Thursday week. It's 10 a.m. to 12:30, and the format is going to be speed networking, where you talk to a number of young job seekers about working in your industry. You can email someone called Paul at fruitbowlmedia.com. He knows all about it. So Paul at fruitbowlmedia.com. And again, that date is Thursday, February the 22nd, 10 to 12:30. Talk to young job seekers, and they want seven local businesses to take part. And it's a free careers event, so that sounds bumptious, that does.
Cool. Trying to read some more.
Yeah. I'm on a roll now. So Marsh Network, they have a breakfast networking with Base Point. Base Point is on the Shearway Business Park, which is in Folkestone, where Jilly comes from. And that's February the 20th, 7:45 till 9. So that must be the evening, mustn't it? No, breakfast, 7:45 to 9.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, see what you did then. Go on to kentbusinessradio.co.uk, put a little slash, add calendar, and that event will come up. So it's February the 20th, 7:45 brekkie until 9 a.m. at the Shearway Business Park in Folkestone.
Cool.
And I was going to say something else, but I can't remember what it was. Medway Council, they're helping businesses to grow their workforce through supported internships. This is an opportunity to learn from other businesses during a complimentary networking brunch and meet the providers who can support you in Medway. It's at the Royal Engineers Museum, which is in Gillingham on the Prince Arthur Road. And it is February the 29th, 9:45 to 12:30. Again, go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar. That's February the 29th. And it's helping businesses to grow their workforce through supported internships. I'm just thinking, isn't it Pancake Day? When is that? Is that tomorrow?
Pancake Day.
Of course, Shrove Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Pancake Day tonight. Tell us if you are planning to. A little buckwheat one, I think, would be nice. And also, of course, you can do it with, it's a new thing I was looking at, chestnut flour. Chestnut flour. Of course, in your restaurant, you'd use a lot of gram flour, wouldn't
you?
Yes,
we do.
Gram flour is delightful. I love gram flour.
A lot of gram flour going into onion bhajis.
Yeah, yeah. So, gram flour is gluten-free, I believe.
Yes.
It is. It's a very good one. Onion barges and what have you, all sorts of things, I'm sure.
Many, many other things. So, yeah. Jules, you have to come down and experience
it. I am. I've got it in the diary now. What was it, 20th of April?
Thank you very much. Yeah. It's funny because Jill was talking about awards and being persistent.
This is Sufian.
Persistent about awards. So, in our industry, the British Courage Awards, the Oscars of the industry.
Mm.
And that was founded by the late Enam Ali. MBE, and he passed away sadly 2 years ago. We were nominated back in 2007, 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, nothing. And we kept on going, and every time we think it's going to be our year, it's going to be our year. And nothing happened. Absolutely nothing happened. Disappointed every time. We kept on saying it's a fix. And then we opened the spinning wheel. And spinning wheel, champagne at the spinning wheel in Westrum. And when we opened it, it was designed to be one of the best Indian restaurants in the whole country.
Mm.
Funny enough, 2012, we won our first awards.
Tenacious.
At the British Curry Awards. 14 years later, we won it every year consecutively.
Wow, that's excellent.
Not the champagne at the spinning wheel.
Yeah.
Champagne Bromley, Champagne Welling. But as a group, we always focused on how to move forward.
Well, let's come in and talk to you about that, because when did you open your first restaurant and why did you, Soufiane?
It was family back in 1989, even though, thank you very much, Jules, for saying I look 33. But, you know, as my son Zidane, he turned around and said, well, I'm 22, so it doesn't work. It wasn't me. It was back in 89. The first Champagne was opened on Chatterton Road.
So this was your father's or uncle's?
Uncle's.
Yeah,
my father did work in it.
And where did they originally come from?
Bangladesh.
And did they come over when?
My father came in the late 60s. My uncles came in the early 70s.
Okay, and were they chefs when they came over, or how did this restaurant come about?
That sector of people that came either worked in the food industry or in the factory, clothing, garment factory, area, industry, sorry.
In Bangladesh?
In Bangladesh, or when they came here, when they were looking for jobs.
Yeah.
And you know what? They were very good at what they did. They took pride and took it to different levels, and Indian food became a big thing. Mm. So most people who could afford it went out and opened up restaurants.
Mm.
Personally, when I was a teenager, hated it.
You hated the restaurant business?
I hated the restaurant business.
So were your uncles and your father trying to get you involved?
150%. 150%.
So what, from the back end in the kitchen or?
It wasn't back end anywhere. Do anything. Mop the floors, clean the glasses. It was anything. But yeah, I think in the early 90s, I went in when I was at school, sixth form, and when I went in college, just earned a little bit of cash.
Mm.
And it was a part-time job, and it helped me out at the time. And I did it, but I thoroughly, absolutely hated it. That's the truth.
What was the most important lesson do you think you learned from that as a young boy?
Interacting with people. That I think that gave me such an opportunity, because one of the things I was very confident with talking to people.
Yeah.
But as you were now dealing with the outer world, age much, much more than you, it gave me such a big confidence.
Mm.
And talking to the women, it was brilliant. It was being flirty and everything else. Honestly, I think that was a big lesson for me and a big opportunity to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell into it, and my family kept me into it because I was good with people. Whenever there was a problem or a chicken tikka masala that was missing in a takeaway bag, you know, so you can go and talk to her or talk to them. and it was good. And you know what? And I think I, as an individual, I grew.
So was that the first restaurant that you opened was?
Back in 89, it was 1989, the Champagne One, which is a 36-seater restaurant.
Mm.
And it was a village area, and it was household name in the local area.
And for those who don't know Kent, which village was it?
Bromley. But okay. It's called Chatterton Village now.
Mm.
And then I came in 1993 as a young kid on the block doing part-time work. And, you know, it was the same story. And then I actually was in the youth service. And then I think in 2000, when I thought, you know what, I don't want to actually do this. But as the family move it forward, we saw an opportunity where Champagne Bromley is now over two floors.
Mm.
And I had the connections, I established a good reputation with certain people, even the banking industry, and I was doing my psychology degree at the time. I wanted to open up a business.
Mm.
That I wanted to take the money but not run the business. But I had a vision, and that's what I wanted to do, and that's what we did. And it was so successful over two floors. It was state of the restaurant. But what we saw, like any other business, where I think the people who run it, or I shouldn't say this, the family were running it at the time, success got to their heads.
Right.
And after a while, business was deteriorating.
Why? Because they were taking their foot off the pedal?
Yes, 150%.
And enjoying the champagne and the wine?
Rewards, yes, absolutely, 100%. And you saw business declining, and I could see it from a different... And the people who were running it, you know, it wasn't professional. And, you know, it was my decision at the time, you know, either I stick to my career or come into the business world, which then I came into the business world in 2005 fully, full-time, and I had a vision that we're going to have a chain of restaurants, and we're going to be one of the best in the country. And, you know, that's hence... From Welling opened up, and the West Room, and here we are.
And are you pleased you made that decision?
150%.
Cool.
150%. I wouldn't turn back time. Actually, there's not a lot. I talk to Zidane, I talk to my kids, families, and people that I mentor. There's nothing I actually regret. You know, even the wrong things that I've done when I was a young kid.
Helps you grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think every experience in life, I think you have to take a few knocks. You take a few wrong turns. You make mistakes. Mm-hmm. But that's what makes you a better person in the end, you hope?
I don't regret it because everything wrong that I did, I took it as an opportunity to learn.
Yep.
And develop.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I'm still making mistakes right now, even in the business world right now.
Even with my kids, blah, blah, blah.
You know, family. But it's an opportunity. I keep on saying, you know what? If you learn from the mistakes, you'll never go wrong again.
Yeah. Many years ago, I used to work as a management consultant and motivational speaker. And I was lucky enough to speak at an event with a chap called Tom Peters. Tom Peters in the 80s was a big management guru that all his books were bestsellers and stuff like that. And I was at a conference with him, and there were a lot of executives from big corporations. And somebody mentioned the fact that they'd thought they were going to fail at something, but they turned it round. And he rounded on the audience and he said, if you aren't failing at things, you're just not trying hard enough. And everybody, he went, you can't succeed without failure. Failure is the most important thing there is in the world, because that's how you learn and that's how you find stuff out. You're absolutely right.
Absolutely. I mean, another way of saying, I'm very proud of my kids. Very, very fortunate to
have. How many do you have, Sophie?
I have three. Two beautiful daughters and a son that looks like me. Thank you very much. And I keep on saying, you know, I look at Zidane. I look at Zidane's journey in the last 20 months or so. With the surgeries and the Achilles rupture that he had while playing for Real Vallecano, and the tenacity to come back, the will to come back, you know, just it's inspirational. It puts me to tears.
Yeah.
And actually, there's a photo that I took of Zidane. I think it's one of the best photos. Just before Christmas, when he started playing for Real Vallecano, I think 2 minutes at the end of the match, he was wide open and he was just screaming as I passed him the ball. And I got that photo. And it was just like, you know, accolades to him in terms of his tenacity to come back. As a father, you sit back and you think, wow, you know, and then you walk away and you're motivated, because if someone who's half of the age of you, if not much more, can do what he does, what we do is nothing if you take it in that stride.
Sure.
Because, you know, when you're in bed and you're absolutely hopeless and you're told you can't move, and to even have the vision to come back.
Yep.
You know, if you look at the business world, yes, the business world is going down, and, you know, nothing's certain in this world. Technology has taken over.
Yeah, absolutely. Robots,
as we were discussed earlier on, the human touch is what's missing.
Yeah.
Like those awful restaurants where you have to now order and everything on an iPad. Horrible. I hate that. You know, I want to talk to someone. I want to ask them about the wine, what goes with it, you know, what's pairing, what's the dish of the day, what, you know, what's the chef cooking. An iPad is just not the same experience.
Well, at Champagne, if you spoke to anybody, and this is after the awards, at Champagne, we for this year, we established a philosophy which is called the Dream. So every single Champagne branch, whether you're in Champagne Bromley, Champagne Welling, Champagne Westrum, the Dream stands for details, responsibility, execution, attitude, and mapping.
Right.
And every sector's got the human touch in it. Because, you know, you need to, for the attitude, you need to engage. And engaging with people in hospitality is so important.
Absolutely. And almost, it doesn't matter, almost anything can go wrong if you have someone there that cares enough to talk to a client and apologize or whatever. Excuse me. You can very soon minimize the damage by having a human interaction of the right type.
I tell you a story. I don't know if I told this story to Jules last time when I was here. My very first night at Champagne, being an 18-year-old, never served a drink. I was carrying a glass of wine and a pint of lager. So I was told to serve the ladies first and the pint afterwards. So as I leant over, I served the glass of wine, the pint of lager, tipped. And it dropped on top of the lady, woman. And she screamed her head off.
Really?
That was a Friday night. Whole restaurant was packed. And the guy felt like, I was looking at him and he felt like he was just going to get up and punch me once.
No.
And then she screamed and then she looked at me and I just went, and it was just trying your luck. I went, if you don't watch it, I'll get another one and I'll pour it all over you again. And shit, the guy who turned around and said, good on you, I dare you. Do you know, funny enough?
So you diffused it by actually being a bit cheeky.
Tanya's listening. She's one of our customers in Bromley.
So she still comes back for this pint in her lap.
She's one of my best friends. Her daughter is the same age as my Sarah, and her son is similar age as Zidane. And we had a journey together, and it's unbelievable. Really, really. Mm. So it's about caring, but you know what? It's about understanding people. Because I think if I went the other way and said, oh, sorry, no, I think he would have, Lee at the time was her partner, he would have caused a massive, disruption to the service.
Yeah.
But you know what? It was unbelievable. And it is. It's just about understanding people, caring for people.
Mm.
And you're in a hospitality, so you know what? That's your job, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So interact. Let's engage.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much to open up the door. It doesn't take much to, just to serve with a smile.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much to show that appreciation.
I'll tell you what I do for entertainment sometimes is I read TripAdvisor reviews. Yeah. Because the answers can be as funny as the original reviews. And I've seen lots of restaurateurs and pub owners and stuff like that get very angry when people post bad reviews. But one that really made me laugh, a restaurant, I can't remember where it was somewhere in the UK. The restaurateur put, why don't you visit our restaurant for lunch and try what one of our customers thinks is the worst meal he's ever had in the world and see what you think. You're just cutting that out. So for me, anybody that reads that review, it immediately minimises the review, if you see what I mean. Mm. Whereas if they try to argue back and go, well, it was your fault, you shouldn't have come in, or you shouldn't have been rude, that just leaves the bad review.
Mm. Yeah.
But if you can diffuse it in any way, even without, saying you're wrong.
It's reverse psychology.
Yeah, really. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Tracy says, she says, I like this saying, there is no failure, only feedback.
Yep.
Listening to you. She says, my belief is that something is only a failure if you keep on repeating the same mistake and not learning something from it. Fabulous Bee Bunker guest using the Bee Bunker hashtag and conversation.
Absolutely. We're going to talk to Safin some more in a minute, but I want to talk to Zidane. Yeah? Is that okay? Yeah,
absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. Zidane, thank you for coming in with your dad and joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And I'm fascinated by your story anyway. Zidane is a professional footballer. He plays for Rayo Vallecano. Thunderbolt in Spanish?
The translation for it is Thunderbolt, but it is called Rayo Vallecano. The club is in Spain.
Yeah. In Madrid, is it?
It's in Madrid.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. And a La Liga team, which is the Spanish equivalent of the Premiership.
Yep, that's correct.
So, how old are you, Zidane?
How do I look?
I would say you're 18, 19. Yeah.
22.
Yeah,
wow.
22.
Yes.
Okay. You see, you take after your dad. He's only 29.
The maths doesn't quite add up there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Take us back. How come you're playing for a Spanish club?
So originally I'm from England, born and raised, played in England. Well, actually, the story was when I was young, I'm talking like really young here, about 4 or 5, I didn't like football, funny
wow.
enough.
And so it sounds a bit like a mirror of your dad didn't like hospitality. Slow starters.
Yeah.
And then I think it was when I was 7, dad was playing at the time, in not a very good level, but he was playing. And I started going to...
He can walk at home now.
Well, I drove. He can walk it. I started going to dad's games, starting to have a kickabout with some of the players on the sideline, and actually started quite enjoying it. And then I went to an organised setup at the David Beckham Academy when I was 7, and I think it just snowballed from there.
Did you meet him?
I didn't meet him. I did play with his nephew. I did meet his mum and his dad, but I didn't meet him.
Okay.
That's still on the cards, hopefully one day.
Mm.
But I started playing, enjoyed it, and I think it just kind of took off from there. Love playing football. And I think when I was about 10, I decided this is what I want to do. This is something I want to pursue, and this is what I want to be my job, essentially. When I was 12, I moved out to America with my younger sister and my mum. My dad and my older sister stayed in the UK, and it was me that caused the family to split apart, which was very, very tough. You go from a 12-year-old with virtually all of my extended family within 10, 20 minutes drive to just me, my mum and my sister,
yeah,
and my younger sister in what felt
country.
Like no man's land.
Mm. Whereabouts in America?
It was in Ohio first, and then okay. we moved to Texas, Dallas, Texas afterwards.
Wow.
But that was a very, it was a hard experience, but it was an experience I would never change for anything. All the steps I've made in my journey, I wouldn't change for anything, because it's brought me to where I am today. Mm-hmm. And it was almost, I wouldn't say kick up the backside, but it was almost like an awakening, like, okay, you're 12, 13 now. You're almost the man of the house because there's no one else. My dad would come every 4 weeks, stay for a couple of weeks, and then go back to England. So I lived in America from when I was 12 to when I was 18. Loved every minute of it. It was experience that I wouldn't change for anything. I came back. I signed for Bromley Football Club, which was the 2019-2020 season, and we all know what happened in 2020.
Position do you play?
I play as a winger or as a fullback.
Okay.
Or as a central midfielder. So I'm quite versatile. Mm. And then I, at the end of that, the 2020 season, everybody's contract more or less got cancelled because of COVID and everything that happened. And I actually had quite a bad injury, just before COVID. I tore my meniscus in a tackle in training. Somebody just came through the back of me and wiped me clean out. So I was recovering from that.
So anatomy and physiology, the meniscus?
Is in the knee. It's the small cartilage in the knee.
Right.
And a lot
so
of times,
very painful.
Yeah. It was painful to the point where it had torn, there was a small piece of it in my kneecap. So I couldn't bend my knee and I couldn't move it. And if I did, it was tearing my meniscus that little bit more. So they literally put me in a brace and locked it until I had the operation.
Right.
And then they stitched it back together, which was... It was a horrible rehab, but if I knew what was to come a few years down the line, I wouldn't be complaining about it so much. So 2020, 2021, I actually didn't play for anyone. It was more just recovering from that injury. And
were you looked after by the football group when your meniscus was injured, or did your family have to take over?
I was looked after by the football club, but because I'd lived in America and I trained in America before, I had very good... physios that I knew that could take care of me. Mm. So I decided to go back to America to do that rehab,
yeah.
Because I had my mum there. It was warmer weather, which obviously helps with recovering from an injury.
Mm.
Overall, I just felt it was a better choice.
Mm.
So I went back to America for that 2020, 2021. I didn't play for anyone. It was more just recovering from that operation. I knew... of a very good coach through a mutual connection in Dubai, because everything in England was locked down because they opened everything for the summer. Everything became really bad, and then they introduced the tier system. And where we lived, we were in tier four. So it was literally like you got to stay at home and do nothing.
Mm.
And at that point, there were certain places in the world that were starting to open back up. So me and my dad decided it'd be best for me to go and train in Dubai, get fit again after the injury.
Plus better weather again.
Better weather. And while I was out there, I got picked up by one of the best clubs in Dubai, Al Nassr, which isn't the same club as that Ronaldo plays at, before anybody asks. is very similar spelling, but I think Al Nassr in Dubai have one S, or one of them has one S, one of them has two S's. But it's not the same club as Ronaldo.
You're a one S man.
So while I was playing at Al Nassr, there was an agent that saw me training with the club, and he took me over to Spain. And he said, look, have a 6-week trial and see how it goes. And yeah. I've been living in Madrid 3 years since.
Okay.
So
a fantastic journey. And for such a young man, mm-hmm. and this is the same for all young sports people, really. I mean, I'm trying to pick my words carefully here. It's a billion-dollar business, mm-hmm. football. And there are a lot of people in it, agents, managers, and mm-hmm. stuff like that. all trying to talk to very young lads, and in these days increasingly girls as well, about their careers. Obviously, as a young man, you want to reach the pinnacle as high as you can in a football pyramid. But how difficult did you find it in those years, moving around and people talking to you and trying to get you to go to different places? Was there a lot of pressure on you, or did you have a lot of support? How did you find it?
It's tough, especially when the hardest times were when I didn't have a club and it was recovering from the injury, and it was all kind of the biggest thing that as a footballer or as a sportsman or an athlete, the biggest thing is uncertainty. When you have that uncertainty, it messes with your mind. It doesn't allow you to go and perform at your peak. Like, for example, when you go on trial somewhere, you're thinking all the time, is the coach watching? Am I doing good enough? Am I not doing good enough? Am I doing something wrong? Especially when I first went to Spain, it was more, I had been through the journey of, okay, I'd been injured, I'd been in lockdown, I just want to enjoy playing football. I didn't worry about, is the coach watching me? What is he thinking? If I make a mistake? When I went to Spain, I had the first week, I didn't play very well. And I think that was more just adjusting, and I'm quite good with the language because I took it in school when I was in America, and I think it was just picking that thing, those small things up, and then obviously it's also merging with the group, and because you've got a lot to prove when you're
a starter there, you know.
Exactly. So once I'd kind of settled, if that makes sense. All I worried about was enjoying my football, and that was it. And in football, a lot of people say, just you let your football do the talking. You don't talk too much off the pitch. If you're doing well on the pitch, things will come.
Okay. I want to ask you a question, which is a bit left field, really. But it just intrigues me more, I guess, for UK teams. But the top end of football is very multinational. You have players from all kinds of backgrounds playing for teams. In your training sessions and coaching sessions in a Spanish team, presumably it's done in Spanish.
Yep, everything's done in Spanish.
Yeah. So what happens to all those players that can't speak Spanish?
Well, you get players that translate. So, and a lot of it is... when you do a certain drill, everything's planned. So there's certain players that would do the drill, certain players that won't do the drill. And they know who speaks Spanish and who doesn't. And also, you always get an example of the drill. So you always say, okay, this is a drill. You're going to pass from here to here, run here to here, shoot, and then whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't think about these things.
Yeah.
Like for myself, obviously I speak English, and I speak quite decent enough Spanish. I wouldn't say that. maybe at the beginning, but I picked up the Spanish lingo, and I speak Bengali as well because I'm British Bangladeshi. So when I was there, there's obviously a lot of players, a lot of people in general, just they can speak English or they can pick up a small bit here and there.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I would, when some of the players didn't understand it completely, I would translate for them. It's the same when I got there. When I got there, I didn't fully, because I'd taken it in school and I'd been out of school for about 2.5 years by that point. I had not forgotten all of it, but it just needed a bit of a refresh. And there was always boys that they were, it was funny because there was one of my best friends that plays for, or he used to play for Real Vallecano. He was like, look, I'll speak in English to you. You speak in Spanish. You help me with my English. I'll help you with your Spanish. And it was always that kind of thing. So sometimes they make it into a joke, but when it's serious and it comes down to the work element of training or drill or something like that, there's always a way around it.
There's a funny story about that, because when Zidane was in America, he was in the FC Dallas Academy, and then I would go and fly and go and watch his games, and when he was in the Dallas Cup, et cetera, et cetera. So 6 months in, I'm thinking, wow, Zidane's learned a lot of Spanish, and I'm very proud of it. Huh. And you can see him on the pitch, just speaking a lot of Spanish. So I was close with the assistant manager. So I went up to him and I said to him, I'm very proud that Zidane's lost the Spanish. And he goes, yeah, so are we. He's got good Spanish. but do you know, have you noticed that he's only uses it at certain times? I said, no, I'm sure he uses it most of the time. He goes, yeah, most of the time when he swears.
It's exactly, it's like Gianfranco Zola, the Italian footballer, when he was playing for Chelsea, and he did one of his first interviews, and they all looked at him, and he said, excuse me, I was taught English by Dennis Wise. yeah, and I don't know if you remember, years ago, there was a Danish footballer, Jan Molby, that played for Liverpool. And he had the most outrageous Scouse accent. It was a Dane with a Scouse accent. It was really quite funny. Yeah. You've had quite nasty injuries, a couple of quite nasty injuries.
Injuries in the industry.
Injuries. Are you fully recovered now?
So that's there's a whole backstory to that as well. So I'd moved to Spain in August 2021, and everything. It took me a bit of time to settle in terms of Spanish life, because obviously I'd lived in America.
You have to stay up really late, for example. They don't sleep, do they?
In the afternoon.
So where I live in the middle of Madrid. So I know about all of that.
It's a lovely culture, though.
It is. It's a much more laid-back culture than England.
Mañana.
Yeah. So everything is much more laid-back. And so even, for example, the time we train. In England, we had to be in at the club about 8 o'clock in the morning, 8:30. And sometimes you can come in at 9. Training would start at 9:30. In Spain, they don't start until 11, 11:30.
No, it's not possible. So. Maybe tomorrow, after tomorrow. Today is a holiday.
But some of the matches are played quite late, aren't they?
Some of them are really late.
I've been to a few Barcelona games at the Nou Camp where the kick-off on a Saturday night is 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I always wonder how the kids get up for school in the morning. You know, the young kids, they just stay up till 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's the thing. I've been up early in when I've lived in Madrid. I've literally driven through the city centre. Sometimes it's really packed and sometimes it's completely dead, and you think, is it a work day or is it a not work day? It's almost that sort of thing. But you try and go through at 12 o'clock, I tell you what, it's packed. When I had moved, it was a bit of a culture shock, if I could say that.
So you were raring to go, and everybody else were trying to dig. You were trying to dig them out of their beds, presumably, or you were there doing your stretches. And
well, I wouldn't say that, because everybody's really professional in the way they are. Mm-hmm. But that sort of shocked me, because I wasn't prepared for that. Like, for example, when we had moved, me and Dad drove over, because we took my car over. So we'd literally done a 22-hour drive all the way to Spain. Mm. And what's the first thing you do when you get into a new place? Oh, let's fix the internet. Yeah. So this is like, I think, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We try going to, it was literally downstairs from where I live. And we try and go downstairs to the internet place. Oh, it's shut until 5.
Yeah, of course.
I'm thinking, what on earth? Like, why is it shut? Yeah. And then they were like, oh, because they're having a siesta. I was like, is that really a thing? I thought that was a myth.
And when you're on holiday, it's even worse, because I've got a place in Valencia, and like I'll swim in the morning, then I'll have a nice breakfast, and then I get out about 1 o'clock, and of course everything's closed till 5 p.m. It's like mad.
So that was a bit of a culture, and it took me a bit of time to adjust, just to... Living away from family, because it's the first time I've lived alone. I've lived out the country before, but I'd never lived alone. And I think that took a little bit of getting used to. So I think after the new year, I was doing really quite well. I'd gone on a run of games where I was scoring a lot of goals, playing really, really well. And then come to the second to last game of the season in May 2022. What happens? I ruptured my Achilles. It happens.
Was it a bad tackle?
No, it was funny enough.
So you can't even get someone back for it.
No, exactly. when I did it, I was so we were winning. I think 3-2 at the time, we were winning by one goal, and they just had a man sent off. So our coach was kind of like, okay, if we go for this next goal, if we get this next goal, it's done, almost.
Yeah.
So I was. Adamant that someone had kicked me. So I was literally in front of the bench, and I'd gone to pass the ball down the line, because in the same game, I think I had an assist or had a really good pass down the line, and we scored from it. So it was literally carbon copy, and I went to do the same thing. And I knew there was someone behind me, but I wasn't worried about them. So I went to pass the ball down the line, and I just fell. And it felt like someone had kicked me, and I was so adamant someone had kicked me. And I got up, and I went to take a step, and I fell back down. Because obviously I'd ruptured the Achilles, so nothing was connected. So when your knee goes forward, there was nothing pulling me back. Yep. So I fell back down, and that's when they got the stretcher out and they took me off and took me to the changing room. And the day that I actually did it was the day after Real Madrid won the Champions League. So in Madrid, they had the parade. So the day it happened, they didn't actually send me for the scan because the hospital was in the middle of Madrid. And where the hospital was, that's where the parade was. So yeah. They sent me the next day. So the next day, I come into the football club, and one of my friends he was injured, and he was watching the game, and I come in and I speak to the physio because he was going with me to the hospital, and I was like, look, how did it happen? How did he kick me? And he went, oh, he didn't kick you. And I went, come again? Like, I was so confused. Mm. I said, no, I've been kicked. I know I've been kicked. And the boy that was there was one of my friends that was speaking English. I was thinking, okay, maybe I'm saying something wrong. Maybe something is getting lost in translation. And I said, look, can you come over here? Can you translate for me? And he's like, what do you want me to say? I said, look, can you ask him, how was I kicked? How did I end up going down? Because it was really badly swollen the next day. My leg was the size of a golf ball. Oh. My ankle was the size of a golf. It was really disgusting.
And you were on your own. You didn't have your dad with you or your mom or...
Funny enough, that year he had come to every weekend game. He hadn't missed a single game. Mm. But the week before, my grandfather passed away, so he wasn't able to be there.
Mm.
And it was the only game he missed that year, and that's when it happened.
Wow.
And funny enough, he has a certain place where he sits every home game, and it was a home game. So when I went down, just instinctively, I looked there and he wasn't there.
Oh.
And it's no through no fault of his own. Obviously, he can't control certain things. And it was hard. It was hard being there by myself. But when I was speaking to the guy, he put his arm around me. He said, look, you weren't kicked. You fell down by yourself. And you always know if you do something by yourself, it's always much worse than...
It's bad.
If it's an impact, because I was thinking, oh, it's just an impact injury. We've got the last game.
It'll be a bruise and it'll go away.
So I think I've just been... Because for me to come off and for them to get the stretcher out, I'm one... I will run through a brick wall. Mm. I would do anything to stay on the pitch because that's...
And they don't film these.
They do.
So could you look on the film?
That game wasn't... I think it was being filmed, but there's something wrong with the footage that I couldn't see it. Or maybe
this is getting spookier and spookier.
Or maybe that game wasn't filmed. I'm not quite sure. Mm. But either way, I don't want to look at it because it was nasty the way it happened. And even when I was like taking my socks off, I could feel my ankle doesn't feel right. And then I think I ended up cutting the sock off because I couldn't move my foot around and whatever.
Well, you probably thought it was broken then.
I didn't know what happened because... When I was, because they gave me crutches before I left the club, I actually tried to walk because I thought, okay, it's not too bad. I had the crutches on me, but I was sort of like lifting them off the ground and trying to walk. And by the next day, it was completely awful. Oh. I went to the hospital, and after, obviously, I found out, and I was completely distraught. And obviously, Dad wasn't in the country. And there's actually a funny story. It wasn't funny at the time. It really cheesed me off, I'll tell you that. So where I live, it's in the middle of Madrid, and where I park the car is about three floors down. So to go up, there's no lift. So on crutches, you've got to go all the way up. I'd gone to the hospital, had my phone on me. They gave me a report. I had the report. And I got home and I wasn't thinking straight. I was thinking about, oh, they said 12 months and whatever. And I got home. I got out of the car, went upstairs. And I was on the phone to Dad as I was coming home. And he said, call me when you go upstairs. I go upstairs. I've left the phone.
Oh, no. Oh,
I've got to go all the way back down. It got to the point where I just counted the steps. So I was like, one, two, three. So I went all the way back down.
Slide down on your bottom would be. That's what I've done.
That. I went all the way back down. Came back up and he says, okay, what Dad said to me, what does it say on the report? I thought, oh my God, I've left the report.
Oh no.
So I had to do it again.
Oh no.
No.
So it's those small things.
So 3 days later, Dad got the report.
So small things like that.
3 days later, because I was actually in the US.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
I was in the US because my father-in-law just passed away.
I remember.
So my wife, we had the funeral and then we went to Sudan and then watched one of his matches and we flew out and just took my wife back to Madrid, US. And it's funny enough, I told Zidane this story because I did not miss a single game, weekend game that season.
Mm.
and I was in Madrid every weekend. And that night, I said to Sheba, I said, look, that's my wife. I said, yeah. I hope he doesn't play. And she was getting really upset because he was doing so well.
Yeah.
It was doing so well.
But you were saying you hope he doesn't pray because you couldn't play because you couldn't be there.
There was an inkling as a father, there was an inkling as a parent. Zidane will tell you, I've always been beside him kicking every single ball. There was something telling me, I hope he doesn't play because something didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And when he rang me before he got to the stadium, and he parked up, before he left the apartment, he rang me and said, look, good luck, da, 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 and then say your prayers and everything else. And then he got to the stadium, and then he said, Dad, I'm going to put my phone away and get into the changing rooms. And at that time, I wanted to tell him, don't play.
Mm. Really? Instead,
yeah, honestly, he will tell you. And I said to him, please, please, please just look after yourself on the pitch. You've got two more games and we're back home together. And those are my last words. And when he rang me, because it was a morning early, it was a morning kickoff, and it was in America, it was...
middle of the night.
Yeah, about 3 o'clock in the morning. So I stayed up anyway. And when he rang me at 4:17 or no, 4:47 or something, whatever it was, the first thing I said to Zidane, where the hell are you? That's what I said.
You use more colourful language than that, I'll tell you that.
When we're on air, stop behaving yourself, Zidane. And because I was just worried. And he was saying, oh, I've just been kicked. I have my back of my ankle's hurting, but you know what? I'll be all right for next week. And then he was explaining, and then obviously they wanted to take him to hospital. And then he didn't go, and it was the next day, and I actually flew out the next day. And I met him in Madrid, and then it was. But they was going to operate. The incident happened on the Tuesday.
On the Sunday.
On the Sunday. On the Tuesday, they were going to operate on him.
Yeah.
And there was one of the best advice I got was, you know what, get the surgery. Not in Madrid. Everything is slow. The medical system.
Yeah. Where did you do it?
So, because it was end of season, they gave me the option to. So I did it on the Sunday. It's funny how we were talking about appointments earlier. So,
not funny as the case.
Not
maybe.
Funny. I feel quite privileged now in terms of how quickly I get my appointment. So, I did it on the Sunday.
Well, you're a talent. That's why
Sunday
you
they
have to
went,
be looked after.
Thank you. Sunday they were supposed to do the scan, but because of the parade and everything,
today is not possible.
So Monday they did it Monday morning, and they said, look, we want to operate on you tomorrow. And then because it was end of the season, we always get 6 weeks off in the summer, so 6 weeks with the club, it's not shut, there's always someone in, but it's the players don't come in. If you're injured, you can come in, there will be someone, but they said, look, it's going to be a big injury. It's going to be a long surgery. And the first 6 weeks, you're not going to do nothing. Like, you're going to be in bed doing nothing. Mm. And you're not allowed to fly for 3 months. And by this point, I hadn't been back home in terms of England for 8 months. And I said, well, 3 months. And what am I really going to do in that 3 months?
You want to be with family.
They said, well, 3 months, the blood's got to heal. And it's got to almost cement the Achilles back together because it's the biggest tendon in the body. So they said, look, 3 months, we can't rush it. We can't tell your body, oh, look, this is the problem. Your body knows there's an issue, but we can't rush that initial stage. We cannot rush. No. And you cannot fly because the blood has to cement the Achilles back together, and you have potential
the
for
pressure
clots
in
and,
the, yeah.
And everything like that. So we said, look, well, I haven't been home in 8 months. Is it possible to do surgery in England? And they said, look, if you do the surgery in England, you've got to do the rehab in England because the way they repair an Achilles in Spain compared to how they do it in England is two different methods.
That's interesting.
So I said, look, well, if you allow me, I'll go back and I'll do it in England because I'd rather be with my family, because a lot of those times it's the environment that helps you.
Yeah, to heal. And also you'd be hobbling. You need support.
Exactly. Yeah. So they said, well, look, it's completely up to you, but the environment I had around me was absolutely great. My closest friends, my family, I didn't touch my phone. I didn't go on social media. I think there was a time where it was almost like I didn't even pick up the phone. It was whoever was around me, they were the best people to have. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you most definitely, if I was in Spain, having no one around me or having one or two people around me, that I would have taken longer to come back. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Cool. We could talk about this forever.
Yeah, I know.
But
I know.
Sadly, we're at the end of the show, really. So, Zidane, thank you for that. Samian, thank you for that. We've got a couple of minutes to round off anything you need to talk about. Jules?
Well, there's lots of stuff. Hang on, I'm just looking.
We've got 2 minutes.
While you look at that, Jules, I'll tell you who did, it was. Fortius Killing, Professor Calder and his team.
Absolutely. Where were they?
In Fortius in central London.
What was it called? Fortius?
Fortius Clinic.
Fortius Clinic, okay.
Professor Calder, one of the best Achilles
physio
surgeon.
And, oh, Achilles specialist. Surgeon,
specialist yeah. around the world. He's done top players. Huh. So big thank you to his team and physio team.
We have a tweet from Fahima Begum. Sounds Turkish to me, Begum, I'm not sure. Can I pass a message wishing Sufyan Big B happy birthday for Thursday, and good luck to Zidane for the future. May his dreams and wishes come true. Sending lots of love from the family from Nahima.
Yep. That's my auntie. Yeah.
Oh, is that your auntie?
Yeah, that's my auntie.
Is she listening in Bromley or?
Yeah, Bromley.
All right.
So she's in Chelsea, actually.
Is she?
Yeah.
Nahima, I like that name. So you're just one more thing. Your Achilles heel. When you've done something to it, does it make it weaker, or will it be strong as it would have been?
If you do the rehab right, it will actually be stronger than what it was before.
Brilliant. That's cool. What we want to hear, Paul Andrews.
Absolutely.
He's going to be stronger.
Look, we're running out of time. We're going to have to get Zidane and Sufyan back again to finish this story. So sorry about it. I need to just tell you about this. It's a shout out for the Business Bunker that Neville Gaunt has asked me to do. And he's saying, will you invest £5, £10, £50 in an entrepreneurship program for refugees? In return, you will be promoted at a corporate social responsibility sponsor delivering SDG goals. It says, it takes a village to raise a child. Join the club of financial investors to make a real difference. And this is a scheme he's running in Asia for refugees in Asia to put them through entrepreneur school. He does a lot of work in Pakistan and India. So there's a GoFundMe if you'd like to take part in this, which tells you more about the program. And you can donate as much as like £5, £10, whatever. And it goes towards running this entrepreneurship program for refugees. And it's GoFundMe.com. How you can help the refugee crisis is the GoFundMe page.
Brilliant. And another tweet, a quick message for the show today. Super proud of my favorite Sufyan, Chachu and Zidane for being on the show today. I could listen to them for ages. Happy birthday. 50th, Sufyan, we know, even though you only look 20. Forever proud of Zidane for being who he is. Love you lots. Love Tasmin.
There you are. It's one of my friends, yeah.
All your fans coming in.
Cool. Have you got anything urgent that needs reading out in terms of date-wise?
Marsh Network is Pet Village Hall, 5th of March, 10:30 till 12. So put that in your diary. It's a face-to-face networking for East Sussex, Pet Village Hall. And there is, of course, the famous networking Mount Vineyard. You can go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar for all of these. But you can meet at the coffee box at the Mount Vineyard. It's a leisurely walk around an hour back at the vineyard for a slice of pizza. Courtesy of Thackeray Williams, and it's February the 23rd, 10:30 to 12 midday.
Did you read Tracy's tweet about her workshop at Ironworks?
No, I haven't seen that.
It is there somewhere.
I'll have a look.
Can you try and dig it out? Also, a big shout out. I'm looking for 7 more businesses to join me on the 22nd of February at 10 a.m. till 12:30 at the Island Works in Sheerness. I'm running a careers program for 30 young people from Ashford College and from and who are currently unemployed to talk about the world of work in a speed networking format. At the Island Works. If you want to join in with that, do
drop me an email.
I know you read it earlier, but I'm desperate.
Okay, so we want 7 more businesses. And Tracy Ferguson said, I'd love a Bee Bunker shout out, please, for the creative workshop I'm holding at the beautifully restored The Island Works. That's at The Island Works. It's a small group, and they'll be exploring art journaling and how to choose a theme to create a beautiful memory journal. For info and to book, go to tazicreates.com, tazicreates.com. That sounds brilliant. Her last one was a success, wasn't it? So she's doing another one.
Everything she does is a success. Yeah. She's a very talented lady. Yeah. And the first one she did was brilliant, and this one is going to be more brillianter.
Even more brillianter.
It's going to be even more brillianter.
Yeah, so it's Create a Beautiful Art Journal, Saturday the 2nd of March, 10 till 4, £30, all materials included.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There is a little email as well, Tracy, T-R-A-C-I, at Tazi, T-A-Z-I, creates.com.
And just to say, Zidane, you're very lucky to have your dad. When my youngest son was playing football, I was on the sidelines, and he hurt himself. It was a game against our greatest rivals. We were winning 1-0. My son was playing centre back. He's a big lad, and he kept saying, "I need to come off. I've hurt myself. I need to come off." I go, "Just stay there and make sure they don't score." He'd broken his leg.
Oh my god!
And I made him finish the game.
Child abuse.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm sure his bone must have been sticking out by the end of the match. I had a riding instructor did that. A horse kicked me, and my leg was broken, and he made me stand on it, and not fun. The bone just went.
I just say www.businessawardskent.co.uk. That's www.businessawardskent.co.uk. Get your applications in, your entries.
Absolutely. There's a big link on the tab on the Business Bunker website as well, so do follow him. Look, we've reached the end of the show. I want to say a huge thank you to Jilly Monk, the fabulous Jilly Monk from All Health Matters, to Sufyan and Zidane Mia.
Thank you.
Sufyan of the...
Thank you.